The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show, 9 states and 60 sticks. Thank you all for the blessing. So when it comes to Louisville Cardinals football, I should just kind of keep my mouth shut, walk to the window at Harris and bet the over, because, like, that's all I got last year, right? I said, I think they're about a 10-win team, because I looked at the returning talent and the coaching and all this other transition and all this backdrop of all this and the schedule, and I was like, okay, yeah, about 10. I got the 10 right. I didn't get a single, like, literally one thing right about how they got there. I did not see the former quarterback returning home finally hand-picking the old man transfer to come back in who he knew from way back. I thought that they were going to throw for a bazillion yards, have some shootouts, and in an ACC that kind of looked there, I thought they'd do that to 10 wins. I didn't think Braum would come in and they'd be kind of plucky and tough on defense, and that Plummer would just kind of be good. I didn't see it happening. Still equal 10 wins. That's not nothing. Want to welcome on right now TheCrunchZone.com, Mark Blankenbacher. Welcome back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chuck. How are you doing, man? Everything good?
Nothing but good, really. Tell me that you had more insight than I did, because I figured, I was like, I've seen this tune. The new coach goes, gets a quarterback he's boys with, and they come in and just fling it everywhere, and that's how they're going to win whatever they win. That wasn't what the season was last year, and so I guess the silver lining is they don't have a 4,000-yard, 40-touchdown quarterback to replace, but tell me if you were surprised by how it got to the 10 wins.
You know, I was. I didn't think the defense would be as good as it ended up being, you know, throughout much of the year. They really were a good defensive team, unless they were playing like USC, who could just throw it over their heads a bunch. But running the ball did make a lot of sense with Jawar Jordan and Isaac Arendo, and an offense that really going in from Scott Satterfield was based on running the ball. I think Jeff Brohm just came in and was like, hey, we're set up to run. I've got two great backs. And, you know, he had some good weapons at receiver, but they were limited there, especially when Thrash got hurt. They really never got anything out of the tight end position. And I think they were just like, we can win with this defense if we run the ball and we just do enough through the air.
All right. I've always said, folks, nothing is as misleading as just numbers for a quarterback. I was like, they're an indicator, but like there's so many layers to that quarterback onion. Tell me like how I'm underselling what Plummer did last year, because I watched him play and he was there to kind of make sure nothing got screwed up, and he would make some plays now and again, but it was not what I thought. I thought it would be drop back and fling it. Tell me what he did that maybe is harder to replace than just the numbers we see.
You know, he managed the game pretty well, and you know what? There are a couple times where Jeff just cut him loose, but that was few and far between. And then I think later in the year, the turnovers, especially against Kentucky and Florida State, and then later against USC when they lost three games, Jeff, I think, in those last three games, like, lost trust in Jack to not turn the ball over kind of stupidly, if you will. And so, like, you know, I think that was a big deal for Jeff. And, you know, Jack Plummer, though, he was a great game manager. He was really good at getting the calls in. He was talented enough to, you know, let the ball go and kind of – but, you know, he wasn't that dynamic guy that you expect that Jeff Brohm's going to produce. And I do think that probably held him back in a couple games, like the Pittsburgh game and the Kentucky game specifically, that, you know, a little bit more of a dynamic guy, a guy that sees it and trusts it and lets it go, probably, you know, equals another win or two for Louisville football, and they had a really nice season anyway. So I think Jack Plummer's a nice start, but I think he's like what you want in a year one of a rebuild here at Louisville football, and they did win 10 games, so it was a heck of a first year.
And you know what? December 7th in Charlotte, like, that's a real thing for Louisville fans now. They're like, yeah, we can talk about that. We've done it. All right, so Tyler Shuck's in, and he's a guy who's done it at a couple of places, sort of, and there's injuries and whatever. Tell me, beyond the injuries, is he healthy, by the way? What are the expectations? What's the vision for him?
Yeah, so they're going out to the practice field tomorrow to start up spring practice. And, you know, Jeff Brohm did tell us a couple weeks ago that he's not yet fully healthy, but that he's like 90%, and that they're going to kind of limit him and what he does, like they do with most quarterbacks in spring anyway, to just make sure that he can get to August fully healthy. But I think, you know, with him, you know, if you watch the Texas Tech-Oregon game, and everybody knows how good Oregon was last year, Tyler Shuck was what they had. And he was running and he was gunning. He threw three interceptions in the game, but he let it fly. And it looks like the type of quarterback that's more in the line of what Jeff Brohm wants out of his guy. And I think if he is 100% and he doesn't have the bad luck of breaking a leg against West Virginia or something like that, going for a touchdown, running for a touchdown, that, you know, Louisville might have enough. And the question is really is like if he's not right, what's behind him? Because I really don't know that Louisville has an answer behind him at all. Like last year, there were a couple options, but those guys have moved on, graduated. There's really nothing behind Tyler Shuck.
So this is funny because I would be expecting to say, will they be more balanced this year? You know, because maybe they were coming off a year where they flung it so much. Do you think it's going to be more balanced, like more what we expected with Shuck if he's healthy and Brohm?
I do. I think you'll see more throwing, although they did get Penny Boone, who's the MAC Offensive Player of the Year at running back out of Toledo. And so I think they're going to run the ball, and I think they'll try to replicate at least some of the dynamic running plays that they had last year. But they're going to have Colin Lacey. They're going to have Ja'Cory Brooks from Alabama. They're going to have Tyler Shuck. And they also upgraded a tight end. Getting Mark Redmond out of San Diego State is nothing to stick your nose up at. And there's a couple other tight ends that they are able to grow in. Jamari Johnson is a freshman, played last year, who's going to be a second year player, and they're really impressed with what he's done this off season. So the tight end position, where it was basically a, you know, they were just puttering along at that position last year, they're expecting big gains at tight end. And then, you know, I think a better quarterback, some, you know, it's going to be tough to replace Jamari Thrash at wide receiver. That guy's just, you know, he's a great college wide receiver, but you know, Jeff Brohm likes to work the slot a lot, and Colin Lacey gives him that, where he really did not have a reliable slot player last year at all.
Yeah, I'd seen his final 2 years at Purdue, I think his run percentage was like 30% and 19%, and last year's like 45%. I was like, Brohm did. He showed up and he was like, he opened the cabinets. He was like, all right, I got to make dinner. And did a real good job. All right, flip it around. I mentioned this. I was surprised. Like, Louisville's defense is salty. Like, that's how they won a couple of their big games. And part of that is because they had a lot of players on the line. How do you have depth in modern day football, and what will it look like in 24 specifically with the line and that? Because that's what stood out to me, was a bunch of fresh guys.
And you know what? They didn't really lose a lot of those guys. And everybody thought that they would lose Ashton Gelati into the draft. Some people had him as high as a second or third rounder. He comes back to school, and then you come back with Dez Tell. You come back, you know, like all the way, and then you go and get Tyler Barron out of Tennessee, who, you know, plays in, wants to play in, and he's a big guy, played a lot in the SEC. I think he's played three solid years in the SEC for Tennessee. And you really don't lose a lot, and you add, you get Jermaine Lole back, who's finally healthy for Louisville at the defensive tackle position. Louisville's loaded up, so on the defensive front. So what you saw last year will just continue. And then they also added a guy named Thor Griffith from Harvard, and he won't be joining this team until after he graduates from Harvard this May, because you're not gonna leave a degree from Harvard on the table,
no,
right, to go play at Louisville. So he's going to finish at Harvard, be with us in the summertime. But he's an all-Ivy League guy that a lot of people, you know, that are looking at the NFL draft think that he's one of those freaks out there. So that defensive line that you saw last year is going to continue. And what they really needed to do is upgrade the secondary. If you watch that USC Holiday Bowl at all, you could tell that they lack something there that hadn't really been exposed in some of the games that they played throughout the year.
Oh, yeah, and you also had a USC quarterback who realized this is my pro day. Like, this is literally my chance to get some tape.
Absolutely.
Wrapping up, Mark Blakenbaker, thecrunchzone.com. Okay, now again, we just gave him credit. You do what you do as a coach. You show up and you just, you make it work until you can do it your way. Is the transfer portal, like, these are heavy, heavy numbers. They got 24 of the 26 transfers are here for spring. Is that kind of what you think Brom will do going forward? Is it a year-by-year thing, or is it we just got to get established? And then, because his name, I have to assume the Brom name is still kind of royalty, certainly around Louisville, and that's where the players are, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of players around Louisville and in our area. And I think what Jeff will do is he will recruit the high school players where he's strong and where he feels comfortable. So Indianapolis, Indiana, all the way up to Chicago, Louisville, Kentucky, obviously. But really, in the state of Kentucky, it's Louisville, and then the UK dominates the rest of the state. And it's been like that for a long time. You might get a player out of Owensboro or Western Kentucky. But I think what Louisville's really strong, they're really strong at NIL. And I think the strategy has been, it's not a big deal if you're second or third place when it comes to a high school recruit. Because when they come back around, somebody else is eating the depreciation on them. You get a bigger, more accomplished player, and you know if they fit at the major college level. And I think that, when Louisville's spending their NIL dollars, a lot of times they're spending it on more veteran players, more established guys. And, if you go into Georgia Southern and you get a wide receiver like Colin Lacey or Toledo to get a Penny Boone out of there, are you getting an elite level, like top level five-star guy? Maybe not, but you're probably getting a pro. And, you put enough pros on the field, you'll win a lot of games.
All right, I need to wrap up, and I don't want to depress you here, but I have to bring up Louisville basketball. In my 50s. No, I would invite anybody, if you're not at least like 40, definitely, go look up a guy named Daryl Griffith. Just go YouTube him. Dr. Duncanstein. I grew up in an era of Denny Crum, Rodney, Scooter, Daryl Griffith, etc. What in the world has happened? Like, that was a short list. Like, you would say, oh, yeah, Louisville, Indiana, UCLA, the best teams in the sport. Like, where are they now?
Well, they fired Kenny Payne after 2 years, disastrous 2 years. He won 12 games in two seasons and lost two exhibition games to Division II teams that don't even count. Our fans were as sick with him as possible, and I think of a lot of our fan base, they're ready to move on after 1 year. But an athletic director can't get rid of a coach after year one. It sends a bad message, whatever. And he also gives the guy a chance. So he was just a disaster, Kenny Payne was. And there's so many things off the field, on the court, that were just a mess. And it's just a real disaster. The good news, though, Chuck, is that the desire and the money, the support that is, that kind of wills a program forward is still here. And people are ready to go. I know Louisville's putting a full-court press on to Scott Drew. Over there at Baylor, they're going to make him, if he accepts, the third highest paid coach in college basketball, and they're going to give him more NIL dollars than he ever knew what to do with. And so Louisville is really approaching this very seriously, and whoever takes the job, whether it's Scott Drew or Jerome Tang or Dusty May down there at Florida Atlantic, Louisville's serious about getting his basketball program back on track, because the fans that live here, this is our pro sport. We don't have national, a pro sport here. We have, and just to give you an idea how competitive it is, we have four drive time radio stations in Louisville that do nothing but talk college sports. That's how much it means here in the city of Louisville. And to be a 12 game winner over 2 years is just unacceptable at every level. And they're going to get it back on track.
Yeah, I mean, my senior year of high school was 86, and they were basically 500. They had seven losses in the middle of January, and they're like, yeah, we're not losing anymore. That's the Louisville program that I grew up with, and so I just get shocked sometimes when I look up, and like Missouri this year, I'm like, how? So, all right, brother, yeah. Didn't mean to take you down that road, but I was like, he'll know. I know. I'm going to ask Mark about it, so I appreciate your input, brother.
Right. Keep an eye out. If Baylor signs an extension to Scott Drew, then we swung and we missed. But the longer that he doesn't have that extension, the more Louisville's in play.
CrunchZone.com is where it is. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Mark Blakenbaker again. CrunchZone, also ESPN Louisville 680. 93.9 FM, the Ville there. So it's, I mean, Louisville, and a lot of things used to be, okay? Heath, get out our stone tablets, and, you know, that, like, a lot of things used to be. There's a better way now. Louisville was for decades, and I mean, like, plural through multiple head coaches. Louisville was shortlist with, hey, who's going to win the national championship this year? And you would ask somebody that in the middle of November, right before, like, because college basketball really used to, like, marquee games would start around Thanksgiving that weekend. And there was a list. UCLA, North Carolina, Duke, Indiana, Louisville, like, right on, as if you said, pass the salt. That's who they were. And it just, they've got the money, and they've got the facility, they got everything, and it just, poor leadership. I don't know, when the FBI, as I recall, I'll say I allege, when the FBI, didn't the school president get investigated for embezzlement? They had a lot of stuff going on. Lot to unpack with Louisville and the school and athletics and everything else. And so the program, you know, oh, and the assistant coach that was running a brothel and or a strip club, maybe more accurately, or a brothel. All right, we'll come back and Heath will give the details. That's next on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show. On this Monday, appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. Also, just a little bit of college hoops conversation. We were just talking earlier about what it is, the code to crack in college basketball is get the coach. And, I mean, you just see it on full display with that reveal party yesterday. And outside of a quad one non-conference win, outside of that, most people, because Bruce Pearl is like number one, and he had stink like all over him, and not for, because, hey, dude, why are you out so early in March? Like, apparently he had a barbecue. I think, Heath, tell me if this is too simplified. He had a barbecue, and then he didn't. He lied. He said he didn't have a barbecue. He had recruits over to his house to eat. And then he got questioned about it. He's like, no. And they're like, well, we have pictures and video. He's like, yeah, okay. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah, in particular, one of the problems was that he was claiming he had no idea who a woman was in the picture who was one of his assistant coach's wives.
Yeah, there's things. There was stuff. And so Bruce, he had stank on him, like NCAA stank. He would have loved his only issues to be, you know, round 32 and he's out. But he had to come back, and he sat out, and he served his penance. And so Auburn was a basketball program, didn't have a whole lot to risk. He was the right coach. A lot of people knew that, but though we can't hire him. Auburn's like, I think we can. And so what if he gotten hired at Kentucky? I don't know. Calipari had stink all over him. None of it ever stuck to him, though. None of it. Like, you go back and look, UMass, Memphis, like, I don't think he personally ever got sanctioned for anything. I don't think. And I don't know if Derrick Rose had somebody else take the SAT. You can hear a lot of stuff. But as far as Calipari, Kentucky's like, yeah, we can hire him. And what happened? What happened? What happened when they hired Chuck Calipari? What happened? What was happening at Memphis? It started happening at Kentucky. They started winning a whole lot. Well, it's Kentucky. Well, so was Billy Gillespie. So was Tubby at some point. A lot of people in Kentucky, and they don't even like that. So it does, even at Kentucky, it matters. It mattered at UCLA. It mattered. Heath, how are you?
You know, it's funny, Chuck, because just looking back at yesterday, what I'm curious about is we're going to get our own bracket reveal in college football. And it'll be the first time, because the four, it's never really about the four. It's just, okay, maybe sometimes who's number four. But we generally have a pretty good idea who the seedings are for everything else, and no one ever cares, two or three. Just the difference between two or three is who gets to wear the uniform that you want to wear. I mean, that's it. There's no meaningful difference. Now we're going to have a certain number of teams we know are in for sure because they're conference champions. And then, okay, well, who's getting to host games and who got seeded against who? I'm curious to see whether or not the college football bracket unveiling can be anything close to this. Obviously, it's not as many teams and there aren't as many obscure teams. You know, yesterday, as soon as James Madison pops up immediately, you've got to be, oh, look out for them. You're not going to have that equivalent in college football. But I am curious to see whether or not we're going to have genuine interest and debate about this show the way that you have all around the country about the show that we got yesterday. You know, as an example, there's a lot of people claiming the Mountain West got lower seeds than they should have gotten based on projections beforehand that all their teams were underseeded, that the committee, for whatever reason, didn't value them enough. Like, are we going to see an immediate response of, wait a minute, the Big 12 is getting rooked here. You know, they shouldn't be in a 6-11 game. They should have been the 7-10. You know, that's the kind of thing I am curious about, and whether or not it's going to translate over to the same kind of excitement for everybody, because it's not just college football fans. You want this to appeal to the broadest base possible. Clearly, the men's and women's tournaments now have achieved that level of penetration. I'm curious if the men's event, when it's up against the NFL on a Sunday, not a men's event, the college football event, when it's up against the NFL on a Sunday and people are getting their bets in and their fantasy lineup set and all this other stuff, can it do the same thing?
Yeah, and it's going to have some direct competition, if not three games on that Saturday, maybe two if they back off of it. It's the biggest money play that they have to get right, and they want to get it right the first year. They don't want it to be like when Hancock was promising everybody, no, we will look at the calendar, and so we'll have our games on Friday. Everybody says, don't have the games on Friday, dude. The ratings are going to be split in half, and they were about split in half. They all kind of make good, so I don't think he wants a repeat of that. Or whoever, you know, the folks going forward. Here is the issue, though. Here's how it's going to work out. As far as the seedings questions that you were having, the difference between, oh, we shouldn't have been playing the sixth seed, we should have been playing the seventh seed. If you're the Big Ten or the SEC, there already is a bias for you, towards you, in your favor in that room. Even from folks who don't like you, you look around, and I've been through the process. And I'm telling you, it gets to be inescapable, and we see how it unfolds every year. Now, on a 12 team, it'll be different, because I think they just started to script 5, 6, 7, 8 just to make people feel good or to send messages to, you know, Marshall. But we're going to see the bias towards the Big Ten and the SEC. They start lining up strength of schedule and conference and game control and all these other things, which is basically stretching it out in pretty points. Those two conferences are going to dominate. So maybe not guaranteed buys, but everything else.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
App. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Everything that man said is true. Monday on the Chuck Oliver Show, we're talking college football. Texas opens their spring practice tomorrow. And so many players that you know from Texas are coming back, including the guy that going into last season. Somebody asked me, and it was a spontaneous thing, who's the number one player? Like, you just get excited. Does college football, who do you? I was like, Quinn Ewers. And it just kind of, the words came tumbling out my mouth. And then he fell on his shoulder wrong. And so, you know, it was another one of those seasons where you're like, I think I see what I like in him, but I want to see more of it. And I want it every week. And I don't want him to get hurt and all these other things. So there are players coming back, but we're going to start with our next guest. We're going to cover some old business. We're going to kind of look at some Texas players that are going to be getting game checks coming in the fall. I want to welcome on right now, orangebloods.com. It's a Rivals thing. Anwar Richardson, welcome back, friend. How are you?
What is going on? Happy New Year to you. It's so good to talk to you. I know football season's around if you are on the line, baby.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you carving out time today. I know they're hitting the field, so, you know, it's a busy time for you. First of all, I want to cover, like I said, some old business. A.D. Mitchell, I don't know, 6'4", 200, can fly. I like all of that. Tell me what kind of Sunday player you think he's going to be, because he swore to everybody, I just need to get healthy and consistent, be in a different offense, and I'll go back home. And, you know, whatever it was true last year. I like A.D. Mitchell a lot. Tell me what you think he's going to be as an NFL player.
I mean, I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be, you know, Mr. Consistent, you know, for whatever team, you know, ends up drafting him. You know, he's a guy that can make all the tough catches. He's a guy that, you know, he can definitely go up and get the ball extremely good in his route running. I mean, he's a person that you look at and you say to yourself, hey, this guy is looking like, you know, a first-round pick, you know, just having all the components that you would need. And so, yeah, A.D. Mitchell, Adonai Mitchell is a guy that looks like he's going to be a really, really good NFL player. But what was interesting about that, Chuck, and you know this as well, and one of the guys that you were high on many years ago, Xavier Worthy. And then Xavier Worthy just goes out in the combine and just so he goes, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and break the 40-yard dash record and run a 4.21. And so now all of a sudden you look back at that Texas team, you said, man, they had some guys who could really fly that was on that team. And Xavier Worthy now looks like a person that whenever he falls in with a team, whether it's a late first, early second, whatever that thing may be, that explains itself, that you have a person who can stretch the field, take advantage of the defenses. And so I want to speak to the talent that Steve Sarkisian was able to accumulate throughout the years, the talent that they were able to develop. But it probably, you know, means good things that are going to be going for them, you know, going forward.
Okay. I'm going to tell you, I went to a coach's clinic one time. I was a high school coach. And the high school coach gets up there from Dillard down in Fort Lauderdale, I believe.
Oh, yeah,
and
he's like, Dillard, uh-huh. Fort Lauderdale.
Like, all right, here's my 275-pound tackle. Here's my other 275-pound tackle. Here's my 255-pound. I'd, like, put down my pen. I was like, I can't write anything about that. In high school, that plays pretty well. When you line up about 675 pounds of defensive tackle on most college offensive lines, Anwar, that plays pretty well. Tell me what Sweat and Murphy are going to be as NFL. Everybody likes Murphy more, I guess, but tell me what those two are going to be, because those are big, giant humans.
But, I mean, Byron Murphy II went in, tested extremely well at the combine. He already walked in there as the guy that everyone thought was going to be a day one pick. I think he kind of solidified that. A lot of mock drafts have him as a top 15 guy at the defensive tackle position. Very, you know, quick feet, extremely, extremely strong. It's just a strong man who can, you know, who can get to the quarterback, but who's also being good as a run stopper. You know, good footwork. And so he's a guy that NFL teams absolutely love. Tavondre Sweat, that's a big human being. we're talking,
large,
I think,
human.
He was at large. And I think he got himself down to a little bit under 370. Now, look, the thing about him is that there's going to be the issue with him is that the weight. Okay, that's a lot of weight. And you might be able to get away with that in college, but can you do that in the NFL? Typically, we don't see defensive tackles who are highly successful at 370 pounds. And the question is, can he eat his way out of that position? So right now you're looking at a guy who might be a two-down kind of guy, maybe not a three-down person, but is there enough on film for you to say, hey, it's worth it? Your first round might be a little risky, but second round, absolutely. I think he's a guy that goes in the second round. He'll be a person that a team will have to stay on just to make sure that weight doesn't get out of control. But the film doesn't lie. What he did in the Senior Bowl doesn't lie. A large, massive human being, but athletic as well. Not just big for big sake. Like, he's also extremely athletic. It's just the weight. And if he can get that under control, he'll be very productive on the next level.
And I tell you, like in college, there's a short side. You know, the hashes are like pretty far apart in college. So there's a short side, and we are so sub-package happy that in the NFL, the hashes are about 6 inches apart. So he's always going to be in the middle of the field. Even shuttling him off for sub-packages would fatigue him to some degree at that weight. So you're right about that. Yeah. All right, let's talk about new business. Quinn Ewers, he is back. None of the targets are. They seem to have all gone to the pros. tell me about Quinn and the approach this year.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, look, if you are, you know, a Texas fan, you're very happy that you have Quinn Ewers who's coming back for year number three. All right. So let's start there. And so you have a guy who has progressed, who's gotten better year after year, and also had a good season last year as well. Gets the team not only to the Big 12 championship game, gets them to the college football playoffs. They were within striking distance of beating Washington, but Michael Penix in that game hit God mode. And because he hit God mode, he ran the ball. Like, yes, it was a different Penix. And those receivers were just amazing, in that game, but you got a quarterback that's coming back that if you're being honest, Chuck, if you look at the schedule that Texas has the quarterback advantage in just about every game this year. The only game that you may say that it might be even might be the Georgia game. Outside of that, Texas should have the QB advantage in every single game that they have this season. So you feel good about where he is. I think the biggest thing with Quinn going forward is can he stay healthy? That's been the whole knock, I would say, against him. He's had injuries in high school. He had injury the first year he was playing that caused him to miss some games. He had injury last year that caused him to miss some games. Can he stay upright? That's why I think this is a really important preseason because there's no quarterback competition. But they have to make sure Arch Manning is ready because if you knock on wood, you just look at the volatility. Sam Ehlinger is a guy that dealt with injury problems when he was there. Casey Thompson had the bad thumb. Hudson Card had injuries as well. And then you look at what Quinn Ewers is doing. Arch Manning has to be ready to go. Like this offseason, you got to make sure that if Quinn misses anything, whether it's a quarter or more, your backup quarterback is ready to go. And then, of course, they went into the transfer portal and they bring in guys like Isaiah Bond, to make sure that, they've got some solid, guys who are there at that receiver position. So they went into the transfer portal. They got three guys that are out of the transfer portal. And that'll be coming in. I think Silas Bolden comes in the summer. But they got a bunch of guys who will be able to come in, including a Dante Cook who's back. So they have weapons. They'll have a bunch of guys who are ready to go. They have an offensive line that can protect Quinn Ewers. So really, realistically, honestly, it's about getting the chemistry with the new receivers that they have, but then also making sure that the five-star, Arch Manning, if by any chance something happens to the starting quarterback, he can hit the ground running.
All right, last thing. I was going to ask you about feel. You've been on a field before a game. You know what it looks like. I used to use the Chick-fil-A kickoff game as my barometer because it would be Bama, LSU, Georgia against, like, North Carolina. A fine team, Virginia. A really, really fine team. And I would look at the bodies of the, like, tackle to tackle, and I would go, all right, this is just different. Texas doesn't look different to me. Texas looks like an SEC team. Am I just, like, having snapshots in my mind that I'm letting overtake? Because usually that's the giveaway is I look at the biggins on the field, and I'm like, this ain't going to be close.
I mean, let's just be honest. Texas went into Tuscaloosa and did to that team, which we hadn't seen another team do in Tuscaloosa.
Well,
they physical them. They bullied them around. Like, the clips are there. They went in there, and they won by double digits, right? So, I mean, your eyes aren't deceiving you, nor are the results deceiving you as well. So, no, when Sarkisian got there, him and Jeff Banks, who you know very well, they looked at their roster and they said, you know what, this is not good enough. Like, we don't have the guys to win in the trenches. We don't have the speed on the outside. We can't win this way. And so that's why they went and built, you know, those guys. So that's why you were able to see them. That's why you were able, when Nate Stark gets there, right, year one, you know how many people that got drafted from that Texas team? Not a one. Not a single one. It was a shutout. They sent 11 players to the combine this year. So to your point, to what you're talking about, Chuck, no, even NFL teams are saying, no, this is what we want, right? NFL teams look at the SEC like, this is exactly what we want. They sent 11 guys to the combine. So no, is it going to be hard to replace some of these guys? Of course, it is what it is. But that being said, when you have the all beach team, the all get off the bus team, you know, that the guys who pass the eye test, when you look at Texas, they're going to pass the eye test, but they're also going to do it from a physical standpoint. And the last thing I'm going to say, Chuck, and I'll let you go on this. When you look at their schedule, Colorado State at Michigan, UTSA, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State, before they get to Oklahoma at the Red River. I mean, you're looking at a team that should win 4 out of 5 games and potentially 5 to start the season. Just keep that in the back of your mind when you start thinking about the bodies and then thinking about early season momentum.
Yeah, at Michigan's no joke, but I've looked at the schedule. Their next 2 on-campus games, like until Thanksgiving, they play at Michigan week 2. Mm-hmm. Until Thanksgiving, at Vandy, at Arkansas. I was like, bravo, sports gods. Good for you. Hey, we're gonna be at the game in Dallas. Heath is actually setting that up. We're going to be broadcasting there that Thursday and Friday, the Texas State Fair. So maybe we'll see you up there, friend.
Let's not do a maybe.
Yeah. Fried pumpkin pie.
See each other.
Fried pumpkin pie. All right.
Sounds fantastic, brother.
All right. Anwar Richardson, I always appreciate him. So that's what we're – I think, he's practically done. Setting that up. So, and of course, we'll be at Dallas, in Dallas for media days as well. So, again, from orangebloods.com, it's a Rivals thing. Looking forward to our first trip to the Texas-Oklahoma game. And so, Texas, you just look at it. I told the Clemson thing that Clemson was like number 9 in America, almost a 2, maybe a 9.5-point favorite, I want to say, over Alabama. Virginia Tech, like really, really good Virginia Tech. Alabama, no. North Carolina, really good North Carolina team. Playing Georgia, no. Virginia, no. That's not really, they don't do the same thing. So it's just big, like tackle to tackle, the big guys, what they look like and then how they move. Like I'll even go like the OG for him in Tuscaloosa, the OG for Nick Saban. Mount Cody could move about a gap and a half, folks, and I mean pretty, deftly. He wasn't just, I'm going to plug the A gap and occupy 2, and there's this pot, so you won't come to this gap. And more than that. So there's your difference. So just look at that, and you'll see there's the game. Like, your in-game live betting, if you see somebody just wearing them out, that's your indicator. All right, we're going to break. Wrap up next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
What I do like about this group is that they do compete extremely hard. They care about one another, and they're willing to get coached. And today is just the beginning of the on-field stuff for everybody in the building. Man, fundamentally getting better, growing in your technique, mastering that, then the scheme, your eyes, your hands. It's a long ways to go until we kick off.
Tennessee head coach Josh Heupel, they had a practice this morning. And he is talking about it's the first step. And it really, everybody, you know, that 6 a.m. workout, 2 days after the national championship game, we're back. So that's all true when they've been running and lifting and doing their workouts and everything else. But, like, you put pads on and there's a football, okay, now it's different. And so that's where we are today. I tell you one thing. He's talking about the players there, and he's got – Tennessee, they took this was intentional. This was what they wanted. They decided, you know what, we're going to spend our dollars for the most part. We're going to spend our dollars to retain. We don't just want to trade players. We really think, that's a comment. We like some of the guys. We really think we could have been a little better last year. Let's bring them back. So specifically on the offensive line, they did that. But, I mean, it's not, and Brew McCoy as well. Cooper Mays, Amari Thomas, Eason. I mean, that was their strategy. But, all right, these guys we're bringing back, who's going to be the leaders? He's got to deal with, Heupel's got to deal with new coaches as well. And he has promoted from within, but I don't know, when DeBoer is leaving UW, his assistants are available. And so, even in flux, you know, will you leave Washington for me? Nah, I don't know. Will you leave Tuscaloosa for me? Maybe. And he went out and got a new running back. So he's got new eyes in the room that weren't already kind of in the room. It wasn't, well, you were the quarterback's coach or the receiver or whatever. Now I'm going to call you the OC, but, you know, I'm still over here with the play sheet. So he's got things to deal with on his own as they do hit the practice field for their spring practice. What up, Heath?
Just keeping an eye on a bunch of different stuff. You mentioned Brew McCoy there, Chuck. McCoy, at least so far, not practicing with them this morning.
They've got a few names that are question marks. Yeah,
he continues to rehab from his injury, and so we'll see whether or not at any point he winds up getting out there on the field or not. But, again, you got a bunch of – in fact, North Carolina today has announced a whole bunch of different players for them. I'm not even sure – wide receiver J.J. Jones or tight end, a whole bunch. I'm not even sure based on the number that they put out there. We talked last week about sometimes you can't really have a spring. I'm not sure what the spring is going to look like for them with some of the injury numbers that are put out there today of some key guys on the offense that aren't going to be around for spring for them. Chuck, we're going to play a little quiz with you here.
Yeah.
Since January, there are five teams whose national title odds have improved the most. And these are not necessarily obscure teams, but there's reasons. You know, you mentioned, you know, a Nick Saban, for example, retires. Maybe somebody else's odds go up as a result. So you want to take a stab. They're all from power conferences. The five teams whose national title odds have improved the most since January.
I am going to guess that George is one of them simply by kind of
that's correct
defense by avoiding landmines. Like, they haven't really had anything. Like, I don't know. They lost Fran Brown and the running backs coach. They're going to be okay. I would guess Georgia is one of them. I would follow the quarterbacks after that. Unfold it for me.
So Georgia's one. Ole Miss is one. Ohio State is one. I would certainly think
shopping
that's
free.
Tied into the Harbaugh departure there. The two from the ACC are the ones that interested me the most. One of them is the team we just had a guest from earlier in the hour. That's Louisville and then Miami. Chuck, people just want to make Miami happen no matter what. No matter how many years in a row the Hurricanes let you down, there's always somebody who wants to believe that suddenly we're just going to wake up and it's 2001 again. And I got a lot more hair, and the Hurricanes are loaded with that South Florida talent and that swag, and you just can't stop them. I mean, look, is it better than January, I guess, because some things happen? I guess. Maybe. They added Cam Ward.
The QB.
I still can't imagine putting money voluntarily on Miami for a national title anytime soon in football.
For a national championship?
Yeah.
No, like over 7.5. Okay, I'll talk to you. National title? Are you crazy? The dysfunction in that program?
And with all due respect to Louisville, again, Louisville, I think Brohm's a heck of a coach. I don't think there's any evidence whatsoever Louisville's on the brink of national title talk, too. But apparently at least some people spending money voluntarily are saying both of them are among the ones that have jumped the most since January. So I just thought it was interesting looking at those two, because in the case of Georgia – you wouldn't think there'd be that much for the odds to move, frankly. It's not like Georgia was down in the 20s here.
No, they look so normal compared to so many other programs. They're like, no, we're good. We're good.
Yeah, I just that surprised me. But, you know, in the case of Ole Miss, again, it just gets back to, you've talked about it, Chuck. You don't think that they can win a national title. They've literally never even been to Atlanta and played for the SEC. It's just funny to me that we just have people that will kind of ignore all history and just say, yeah, but it's different now. I'm not saying you have to always believe in history. The facts are, though, no one has won a national title in college football for the first time since Steve Spurrier and the University of Florida in 1996, back when I was still in college. You're going to tell me that Ole Miss is ready to win a national title when they haven't even played for the SEC? I'm not sure I can go take that ride with you.
And part of it's not because, but what I'm about to say shows you they won't. They play in a home stadium with 64,000 seats. Go find the last time a national champion came from a stadium with 64,000 seats. I don't know. You may have to go back to, like, Georgia Tech in 1990. Like, that's just not the program that does it. It's just not. There are so many unfolded layers of this that take decades and decades to equal. And so you don't win a national championship. That's not what you do as a program when you seat 64,000. Now, is the 12 team the big equalizer? Thought. Could be. We'll see if it changes now. Wraps up on a Monday. David on the ones and twos. He's doing what he do. Me doing what I do. 22 hours from now, I'll be back together.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.